Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. Founders, entrepreneurs, and individual professionals, we all need to keep track of ideas that are helping create our today and tomorrow. Bits About Books will strive to find those books and speak to their authors, go behind the scenes and understand what inspired the authors to write the books that they did and how they went about doing so. Through our conversations, we hope to gain insights that will help us to get the most out of our efforts. I'm your host Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform where our mission is to make buying easy. Welcome to Bits About Books. Thank you for your time and for joining us in this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. I personally look at each comment and will give you a shout out to each of you in our following episodes. It means a lot to hear from you. Today we have with us T.N. Hari and we will speak about his brand new bestseller, Sailing Through a Storm, Making a Crisis Work for You, which he co-authored with Sanjay Swami, managing partner and co-founder, Priven Advisors LLP, advisory to Prime Venture Partners.
And, individuals have a crisis of their own. For example, if there is a child born to a sex worker or born to someone in Afghanistan in the 1980s, I think the child would have faced an adversity and crisis right from day one. So how did someone like that deal with a crisis? So we thought it's important to therefore take crisis in your life as a common theme and talk about, you know, examples and stories of how individuals and companies overcame crisis, how individuals and companies prevented a crisis by doing the right things and not just handled a crisis well after it emerged. We've gone back to history and talked about Ahilyabai Holkar. She was an amazing ruler in central India, in Indore, and she ruled for 22 years at a time when the country was almost at war continuously, but her kingdom was almost at peace. What did she do? What kind of leadership style did she bring? Then we talked of women scientists who should have won the Nobel Prize, but in the 1940s, women couldn't even graduate, even at institutes like Cambridge, Oxford, and even Harvard. Yet they went on to produce such amazing scientific work that helped people like Edward Hubble win the Nobel Prize. So while Edward Hubble got the Nobel Prize, the lady who deserved it was Henrietta Leavitt. She was a deaf and dumb woman, hearing impaired. And she did all the work, backbreaking work, without an expectation of credit. What inspired and motivated someone like her?
T.N. Hari is an advisor and sounding board to numerous young entrepreneurs and startups. He is also a strategic advisor at Fundamentum, which is a homegrown growth VC fund set up by Nandan Nilekani and Sanjeev Agarwal. Hari currently heads HR at Big Basket, a grocery unicorn from India. He has studied at both Indian Institute of Technology and the Indian Institute of Management, and worked at an executive level with multiple startup scale-ups. He has been through 4 successful exits in different industries, Daksh, Virtusa, Amber Research, and Taxi for Sure. His passion is in scaling organizations through clear thinking and relentless execution. He has co-authored 5 books, including this one. Now, onto this perceptive episode with T.N. Hari. Hari, welcome to Bits About Books. It's great to have you here. This is your second book this year in a row. And I think it's a very, very timely book to talk about crisis and how you can, as businesses or as human beings, how do you cope with it and how do you sort of triumph? So tell me, what was the trigger for writing this book?
So the trigger, I think, is pretty obvious, Subhanjan. I think we are all living through historic time and we will be talking about this to our children and grandchildren. I don't think anyone would experience something like this more than once in a lifetime. And this is a bit of a medical crisis, which has eventually snowballed into an economic and financial crisis as well. So I think it is a once in a lifetime thing that most of us are going to experience. And as we were going through it, we also realized that this is not the first time that the world has faced a crisis, and this is not the first time that companies, industries, and individuals have faced a crisis in their lives. And we also realize that, you know, there are certain similarities in the way individuals and companies respond to a crisis. Some people respond in a very positive way and emerge stronger. Some people probably crumble under a crisis. Some companies handle it with elan and refinement and elegance, whereas some others handle this very badly. And, you know, individuals have a crisis of their own. For example, if there is a child born to a sex worker or born to someone in Afghanistan in the 1980s, I think the child would have faced an adversity and crisis right from day one. So how did someone like that deal with a crisis? So we thought it's important to therefore take crisis in your life as a common theme and talk about, you know, examples and stories of how individuals and companies overcame crisis, how individuals and companies prevented a crisis by doing the right things and not just handled a crisis well after it emerged. And some of those stories are not spoken about, which is heroes who prevented a crisis. And we've gone back in history to look at some examples. And a crisis is also an opportunity for innovation. I don't think most people recognize that most innovation in the world throughout history, right up to the present time, has happened in the time of a crisis. So this is something we brought out as well. So adversity in personal lives and how people dealt with it. We've talked of some real stories, stories from history, stories from contemporary history, as well as individuals that we know. We've talked of, you know, how do you need to balance emotion and reason while dealing with situations like this. And finally, we wrapped it up with, you know, what are some leadership traits that individuals need to demonstrate in a crisis like this or in any other crisis for that matter. We try to wrap it up with that.
So it looks like a very broad canvas. So who is your target for this book?
The target for this book is everyone. So for example, the other book that we finished and recently, which is From Pony to Unicorn, is addressed to the startup ecosystem. You could be an entrepreneur, you could be an investor, you could be an employee or a leader at a startup, and that book would be useful to you. This is a bit of a self-help book in some ways, and therefore everybody would find it useful because every individual goes through troubled times at one or the other point in her life. So it's helpful for everybody. Companies go through troubled times. So it's important for everybody, we felt.
How long did it take? So obviously the trigger was post-COVID, right?
Yes.
Which didn't leave a lot of time for you to actually put this book together. So how long did you take to write this?
It took about 4 months.
Okay.
To write this book.
How did you go about structuring it?
So I think the way we went about structuring it was obviously we did talk about, you know, the historic time that we are living through. So that was one chapter, which is we are seeing some things which are unprecedented. Say, for example, we are seeing oil prices going negative. Imagine oil being sold at a negative price. Interest rates have gone to the negative zone. What does this really mean? You know, price of oil being negative means what? You can go to a petrol pump and they will pay you for taking the petrol from them. So these are interesting questions. So in the first chapter, we talked about this and we also talked about, you know, some things. In the first chapter, we introduced almost everything else that would follow in the book. We talked to the fact that, you know, the world has become one big global village. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? For example, the pandemic spread very rapidly because the world is one global village. The food supply chain is a global supply chain. Big food companies are controlling most of the food production. People are traveling across the globe. It's a circulatory system of people perfect for transmitting disease. So is this global village a good idea or should we go back to Schumacher's, you know, small is beautiful? So we've discussed that issue as well. So we've talked about all these things in the beginning. We've introduced this. And then we've gone on to talk about our personal experiences about dealing with a crisis, various types of crisis we've talked about, and our personal experiences. So that comprised, we took about three chapters to talk of very interesting stories, which are drawn from personal experience and therefore are readable, credible, and learnable. So it is not theory. So we've talked about stories. We've talked about, you know, how this kind of, you know, feeling of depression and elation is a cycle, which is an inexorable cycle, which plays out. You know, 2008, the crisis happened because of the cycles of ups and downs, you know, fantasy on the one side, you know, irrational exuberance on the other side, on one side, and on the other side, terrible fear. So how do these cycles continuously operate? And who are the people who emerge successful in these cycles? So we've talked of examples of what people did in 2008. Many people lost their entire life savings and wealth. But many people made a lot of money and became wealthy when the markets were collapsing because they demonstrated character. So we've talked about what is really character in this meme, which is the difference between knowing and doing. Why did some people make so much money when the in 2008, when everything around them, the whole world was collapsing? What did they do right? What guts did it demonstrate? We've talked about that. We've talked about how data is helpful in solving for a crisis. And then finally, we concluded this with, you know, we also talked about preventing a crisis, how some leaders are very good at preventing a crisis. We've gone back to history and talked about Ahilyabai Holkar. She was an amazing ruler in central India, in Indore. And she ruled for 22 years at a time when the country was almost at war continuously. But her kingdom was almost at peace. What did she do? What kind of leadership style did she bring? We differentiated between Akbar and Aurangzeb. Why did Akbar consolidate the whole country, bring the whole country, all the communities, everyone to gel well and work together? But why was Aurangzeb such a divisive character? Why is he hated? Why did he, you know, why was his time, you know, marred by war? Then we talked of stories of people who are born into adversities. Many women, we've written the stories of many women, women scientists who should have won the Nobel Prize. But in the 1940s, women couldn't even graduate, even at institutes like Cambridge, Oxford, and even Harvard. Yet they went on to produce such amazing scientific work that helped people like Edward Hubble win the Nobel Prize. So while Edward Hubble got the Nobel Prize, the lady who deserved it was Henrietta Leavitt. She was a deaf and dumb woman, hearing impaired. And she did all the work, backbreaking work, without an expectation of credit. So born into adversity is born as a woman in those times. What inspired and motivated someone like her? What inspired and motivated someone like a Viktor Frankl, who was part of the concentration camp of the Nazis at Auschwitz? He survived and he wrote a book, Man's Search for Meaning. So what inspired people like him to survive? I know a sex worker in Bangalore who started her life as a sex worker. She runs an organization today that caters to the needs, healthcare needs, financial needs of 15,000 sex workers in Bangalore. What made her do this? As an individual sex worker, she could have collapsed and felt cursed her fate. But she said, no, I won't. Let me do something for others. So she has changed her life. She changed the lives of so many people. I know her very well. So I've written her story. What made make someone like that do this? So the story here is that all of us have it in us to emerge out of a crisis successful. All of us can do it. It's just that we need to listen to some of these stories and tell ourselves some of these stories. All of us eventually, are, as individuals, are people who our outcomes and our outlook to life to a large extent depends upon the kind of stories we have seeded in our mind. So it's important to seed right stories in our minds. If we seed those right stories, then we will all be successful. A crisis won't harm us. So that's broadly the theme.
Great. So how did you sort of land on the chronology of the chapters? How did you go about structuring it? How did you write it? Did you sort of divide between yourselves the various chapters, or did you co-write all the chapters? What was the process?
Our personal experiences obviously are written independently. So Sanjay's personal experiences are covered. My personal experiences are covered. So obviously those stories have been written independently. Other chapters we discussed between ourselves, and some he wrote and some I wrote. Between us we wrote.
Okay, so and how did you arrive at this 10 chapter structure? What went on behind that?
So broadly, I think we looked at adversity in totality. And therefore, for example, preventing adversity is an important component, and we had to cover that. So preventing a crisis. So that's pretty much one chapter on that. where we've talked of the story of Ahilya Bai Holkar. We've talked of the story of Johnson and Johnson's Tylenol crisis. We've talked about that as well. How people predicted that Johnson and Johnson would collapse after the Tylenol crisis, but then it emerged as a much stronger company. So preventing a crisis and dealing with it once it emerges, dealing with it well is one chapter. Then we realize the one aspect of adversity is that there are a bunch of people who are not privileged like us, who are born into deep adversity. So we thought that's an important story to tell because people like us should feel happy that we are born into a better world than many others. If they can make it, why can't we make it? It's important to tell that story that people who've been born into an adversity and still won against all odds. So that was an obvious chapter for us. Leadership traits, for example, was an obvious chapter for us. And then we've also talked of, you know, how innovation has happened in the time of adversity, because that's an important theme as well, which is that, you know, the Yom Kippur War in 1972-73, that was the time when Israel and Egypt fought and OPEC was formed and oil embargoes were imposed. Oil prices went up four times. And in the process, how did it encourage innovation? Suddenly, solar energy became very popular. Suddenly, you know, renewable energy, water, solar, wind, you know, people began investing in those. Nuclear energy became important. France became predominantly nuclear energy producer, relying on nuclear energy. It created, you know, cars which conserve fuel, fuel-efficient cars. It created, spawned off huge innovation. So the war between Israel and Egypt spawned off such a high level of innovation.
It's time for a short break. Innovation has always flourished as if by necessity during times of crisis. Hari started to talk about how world responded to crisis, starting with the Israel-Egypt War of 1972 that led to OPEC. Stay with us.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for Bits About Books and founder of PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. As we went into the break, Hari started to explain how the world always responded to crisis with innovation. He started with the formation of OPEC in the wake of the Israel-Egypt War of 1972. Let's dive back in.
We've talked of World War II. Almost every innovation that you can think of, you know, right from radar to sulfur drugs to medicines, all were an outcome of scientists working with a lot of intensity. We could put man on moon because of World War II. The rockets that were used by Germany, you know, to launch an attack on England and London, those rockets were improvised further to send man to the moon. And, you know, so many other developments that happened rapidly after World War II, the world took off. And that was because of the innovation that the war actually spawned. So I think we've talked about how innovation, you know, we've talked to Big Basket's approach to innovation in this crisis. So we've talked of some companies' approach to innovation as well. So that was pretty much an obvious chapter. Then we talked of the, you know, the continuous cycle of optimism and pessimism. That's a cycle. It's a human life cycle. It plays out in the world. So there is stock markets rise and hit the skies. Absolutely fantasy. So fantasy is abandoned by reason. It creates impossible monsters. Similarly, fear abandoned by reason also creates impossible monsters. And the life oscillates between those two monsters. How do you make the best of those monsters and not crumble? So I think we've talked, that was an important one. We've talked about that. So that's how we structured the chapters.
What kind of research actually, when obviously you did a lot of research. You are referring to a lot of stuff. And again, as I said, it's a very broad canvas book. It's not a straitjacket kind of narrative, right? So you had to, it was a lot of back and forth in history, in time, multiple geographies and so on. What was your process of researching this?
See, Subhanjan, we are people who keep a very busy schedule. We are practitioners. Our books are not very research intensive because we are not academicians. Our entire approach is, you know, use whatever you have learned in your life to be able to tell stories. So the Yom Kippur War, Israel and, Egypt fighting, oil prices going up, creating, you know, fuel efficient engines. They were all stories that were there in our minds. Right. The fact the stock markets go through cycle, they're all there in our minds. So we just had to fit them into this, larger theme of a crisis. And to fit them, we just needed to research a little bit to get the specifics. But the wider theme was always there. For example, I am a student of cosmology and physics. I love these subjects. And therefore, I knew all the stories right from Chandrasekhar Subramanian, who never got recognition for 50 years. He propounded a theory at the age of 19. He got the Nobel Prize more than 50 years later. Can you imagine how unfair, how unjust it was? So that story was there in my mind, the story of the three women who did amazing work, but men took away the Nobel Prizes and they were never even mentioned except in the footnotes. They were all there in the mind, born as a woman in those days, what an adversity. So we just did some little bit of research to get some specifics. Otherwise, our books are never research driven.
This crisis, which is the COVID-19 induced crisis worldwide, and the two or three previous crises that we have seen, I mean, starting with the dot-com bubble burst in the 2000, followed by 9/11, and then the 2008 crisis. These are very, very different. So those sort of, like 9/11 was a sort of a, black swan. It is not like, so economic crisis and economic sort of ups and downs we are more or less used to. 9/11 was a black swan and so is this one. How do you see the reaction of the world from your vantage point being different for each of these?
So for example, Subhanjan, if an event happens, let's say once every 10 years or once in 15 years, we would call that a black swan. It comes as a surprise sometimes, 10, 15 years, 20 years. But what happens if an event happens once in 200 years? Would we call that as a black swan? Would we call that as a really rare event? But you have to see it from the time span of either an individual's life or the life of humanity. So what is rare in the life of one human being may not be rare in the life of humanity. Say, for example, a medical crisis like this may have happened only once in our lifetime, but it had happened once before in 1915. For example, you had, the Spanish flu, but it was 100 years before. But in the lifetime of humanity, these things keep happening at regular intervals. You had the plague, for example, prior to that. And, the world, it's always said, how did plague, get transmitted? How did disease get transmitted? Actually, disease all got transmitted because of traders, because of sailors. As the world began integrating more and more, all of these diseases began spreading. So the soldiers who went out on conquest didn't just bring back booty, but they also brought back germs. But now the world is far more integrated and therefore the spread is very rapid. It's almost instantaneous. The Spanish flu took a long time to spread, but it did spread. It came to India. It killed so many millions of people in India. We don't remember that because even our fathers maybe were not born at that point of time. So, but many of these events have been happening. And if you go back a little bit in history, if you read, for example, Guns, Germs and Steel, we've talked about that in our book as well, which is Jared Diamond.
Yeah.
If you see why so easily, Europeans conquered South America and North America, one of the reasons was that they had a host of germs to which they were immune. Normally, germs flow from livestock to human beings. And in Europe, people had migrated from hunter-gatherers to settlers well in advance. And they had got all those diseases well in advance. They had become immune to them. And when they went to South America, the Spaniards very easily overcame the Incas in Peru and the Aztecs in Mexico, because they had diseases like smallpox and, scarlet fever and all other diseases to which they were immune. The local population, including the armies, had never seen such a thing. So they were decimated. So if you go back a little bit in history, you will find that disease has been part of our lives. In fact, a lot of germs live in our bodies. It's just a beautiful relationship we have with those germs. In our gut, for example, the large intestine, we have more bacteria than the human cells in our body. And we have such a beautiful relationship of symbiotic relationship that they help us, we help them. Without them, we wouldn't live. Without us, they wouldn't live. But except that once in a while, this relationship becomes very adversarial, if you will. And each begins to threaten the other. So the war between germs and humanity is not entirely new to humanity. It may be new to us as individuals, but not new to humanity.
Right. So to sum it up, what kind of individual traits or in case of business, leadership traits do you see emerge as a common thread of ones who prevailed and ones who didn't?
To answer that, I think we've identified five such leadership traits, Subhanjan. The first is, I would say, it's the difference between knowing and doing. And we've talked of multiple examples here. I'll give you, a couple of them. One is, when in 2008, everyone knew that the housing market was highly overvalued. Everyone knew that. At least most smart market players knew that. But nobody did anything about that. And a famous movie was made by the name Big Short. And I don't know if you remember watching that movie. It's a beautiful movie where a bunch of people and there is one particular individual who decides to bet against the housing market by selling the underlying stocks short. And the risk of selling short is that you could go bankrupt if your predictions don't work out in the time frames that you think they will work out. And in the end, he ended up making a huge amount of money. This is not an imaginary story. This is the true story of an individual called John Paulson, who ran a hedge fund and who made $14 billion of profit in that period just by betting against the housing market. So everyone knew, but he decided to bet his farm and house against it. So it needs guts to do that. And that is character. So knowing doesn't help you in any way. Character is what helps you. Investing is not about knowledge of financials. Investing is about deep character. Lord Buddha told us, how to be happy. He has given us the recipe. Many religions have given us the recipes, but most of us, happiness still eludes us because we know what it takes to be happy, but we don't have the character to make it work for us. So we've talked at length about that. So knowing versus doing, which is about character. We've talked about meaning and purpose, which is that it's important to find meaning and purpose. I think all of us, have our lives centered around ourselves, around family, around spouse, around children, around money, around possessions, around achievement. But it's important to have some broader meaning and purpose and set of principles that drive our life. I think sometimes it's very difficult to discover purpose and meaning in life. We all keep wondering, what is the purpose of meaning in life? Is it all faff? Can there be a real purpose and meaning? But I think if you go through some degree of adversity and do some bit of introspection, reflection, and with some years of experience and age, I think you will get a sense of purpose and meaning. It's important because it can help you stay grounded. The next one is being a karma yogi, which is balancing emotion and reason and keep doing whatever you are supposed to do. The Bhagavad Gita principle of being a karma yogi, which is don't get too carried away. Don't be too cut and dry, but don't be too emotional either. Get that balance perfect. Be a good karma yogi. The next one is we believe most crises are the creation of alpha males, very greedy, very ambitious alpha males. And therefore, I think the leadership style in companies and corporates has all been dominated by these alpha males. And every crisis, whether you take the 9/11 or whether 2008 or dot-com bust, is all alpha male greed, alpha male ambition. So I think we need to temper that with feminine leadership traits. So I think corporates and individuals need to bring together both feminine and masculine leadership traits. I think that's the leadership recipe for success in a crisis. And the last one is it's important to be fearless and selfless. And fearless is not the absence of fear. Fearless is being scared to death, but nevertheless, padding up and going to face Shoaib Akhtar without a helmet. I think that is being a bit fearless. So fearless is acting in spite of fear. I think many people freeze and, you always get scared when you have to take some tough calls. You get scared when your very powerful boss expresses an opinion and you differ with that and you think that opinion is going to harm the company, but you remain silent. Then that is bad behavior. It's important to be fearless there, speak your mind at the right time, right place. And if you're on top of that selfless, which is if your actions are driven by, a bigger interest, then your actions are more likely to be accepted and you will succeed. So these five principles we've laid out.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink. the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos, and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
Sounds great, and it's just a great note to end this chat. It's a very timely book because I think we are all searching for ways to make sense. I think the stories of other people who have coped with great crisis or great adversity can be very, very inspiring, and I really look forward to hearing more about this.
Thank you so much, Subhanjan. Thank you.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes with great conversations on breakthrough books. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it.
This BizCast original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Subhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.